outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
You should have seen me last Friday, Kyle.
Okay, last Friday? What were you doing last Friday?
I was even proud of me. My goodness.
Okay.
We left the house here in the morning about 10 o'clock, had to go to... We're going to a nursery to look for a tree for the atrium inside our house, and there's a certain kind of tree we're trying to find. It's called a black olive shady lady is what it's called. But it's not even an olive tree. That's just got as the name in it, but it's not even an olive family. It's just crazy. Anyway, no one in Ventura County has one, so we heard there was one in Malibu at a nursery, so we left to go to the nursery. We're going to be gone a couple hours, be home, right? And on the way to that, they don't have one. But there may be some at a warehouse near Los Angeles International. Here's non-spontaneous Wayne and Sarah, and we're driving down to LAX in the traffic that is LA on a Friday, which is just And I'm going,
my heart weeps for you.
not getting home for lunch, not getting home. And so we ended up leaving the house about 9-ish, thinking we'd be back around 11, 1130. And we didn't get back till like 2:30 or 3. Found the tree we wanted, so the trip was worth it. And the whole time, Sarah just in the car going, isn't this fun? And I'm going, okay, yeah, working on the fun part of this. But yeah, I was telling Sarah, the Wayne of 5 years ago couldn't pull this off. I go away on a Friday morning for a couple of hours and end up being six. But Sarah's just relishing it. The warehouse we found, this guy could really help us with other plants to surround the tree with, and it just turned out fabulous, but man, it was not my thought for the day.
That's quite the treasure hunt for one very specific tree. How did Sarah even land on this one specific non-olive bearing tree with olive in the name?
It's actually a swamp tree out of Florida is what it is. I don't know why they called it black olive.
Okay.
But it was recommended by the lady who's helping us design the house, and she thinks this is, and then we, on websites, it says this is one of the two or three best trees to put to grow indoors under a skylight.
So, really?
Yeah. So we're going to have a live tree in our house and some other bushes around it in this little 5.5 by 6 space that is just beautiful. I mean, I can't wait to see it come together.
So where is it at in your house? I'm trying to envision this.
It is right in the middle of the house.
Really?
Right in the middle. Yeah, there's this side is front room, kitchen, dining room, den kind of area in one big line. And then this is right in the middle of all that. And it's right by the hallway that takes you back to the bedroom wing. So,
wow. So you're going to be trimming a tree inside your living room.
Yeah. And this tree is 12 and a half feet tall.
Okay.
And it's got, you know, it's got like maybe a 2-inch trunk on it. That's really tiny. So it's going to fill the space. It's an amazing space. It goes up to the skylight.
Wow.
You have to come out and see it someday. We'll get it working. We'll
absolutely
take a picture or something. I mean, the atrium they built, it was already there. We took all the glass out and made it part of the house instead of it being outside the house. So,
okay.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I'm sure no one else cares, but it was just, it was funny all day long. Sarah kept laughing. Can't believe you're doing this. Yeah, I can't believe I'm doing it either, but. You know what? We're going on a journey with Sarah. That's what we're doing. So we had a great time.
The speed of Sarah, right? Like she's just hanging out, enjoying it, not in a rush, just enjoying the process. And I still don't know if I would be able to, I would hope that I'd be able to operate at the speed of Sarah if I was just hanging out with Sarah, but I don't know. I would probably have had a fairly non-positive reaction to that being sent from Malibu down to LAX and then having to go back around and sitting in LA traffic the whole time.
So then we had to go to Simi Valley and come back around the other way and then go to the house. it was a day. And I can't say that I was totally relaxed to the whole thing. I pretended I was. I did pretty good not letting Sarah know of all the tension going on inside. Swallowed it, got her done, and she's very happy, and I'm very happy.
Awesome.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this edition of The God Journey.
So best thing you heard this week?
I'm going to cheat. It wasn't this week, but it's one I've been holding for a little bit. But I love this. From the book I've referred to, I said the last time I thought this was the last quote, but this may be the last quote I use from this book. It's from This Here Flesh with Cole Arthur Riley. She said this, which I love the phrasing here. For those of us who know ongoing trauma, we become so used to having fear in our bodies that it is hard to see that it has made its home in us. Isn't that an expression? That fear has made its home in us. So used to fear, so used to that. And then she finishes, when you have felt chronically unsafe in your own home, the safest thing can feel like terror. So, I mean, that's obviously not a quote for me. I don't know that I've let fear have a home in my body. I'd certainly know people who have, but man, it really changes how I relate to people, because I know people who are chronically fearful. And even when you try to love someone who's caught in that, your expressions of love may not be received for what they are. Because the safest things can feel like terror. And I've thought about, you know, you talk about your bunker in times past and defending the bunker at all costs, and love's trying to find its way into a bunker that you're trying to protect. And I just makes my heart hurt for those who have lived in such fear and have negotiated it their whole lives and are so at home with it that they don't recognize it. And they can't recognize love when it comes close to them until, obviously, God does a work that opens the door. What about you? You got a...
Well, I resonate with that more, probably more so just today than I would even like to admit, honestly, because Jess and I have been in an interesting process just trying to figure out what next steps are. And I've had several different job options that have come up, and I had informally accepted one, and then my dream job offer, honestly, came up in a city in northern Wyoming that Jess and I have always talked about wanting to live in, because it's gorgeous and it's still within driving range of my family, but it's in the mountains and it's got a really cool, it's just a very, very cool community. And yet when I was faced with making the decision, I bumped into fear that had made home in me. And God's been really uprooting that a lot over the last 10, 15 years. And I've shared some of that here on the podcast and just that process. But man, when the rubber met the road, I found myself getting shook up more than I would have thought I would have in regards to the way that other people might respond. Especially my family has thoroughly enjoyed having me live within a very close proximity to them. So we all live within about 20 minutes of each other, and my parents and my siblings have thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yep.
And so for us to step away from that, you know, and to pull Elle and Evie away from all their cousins and, you know, just some of those things, some of those considerations. And yet Jess and I have both felt like, okay, Father, like you've invited us into this. We really feel like this is your nudge, your prompting. And yet, man, you even made the comment earlier to me today that you haven't ever seen me like this. You caught a glimpse of stressed out Kyle in fear, and it was not something that I think you expected. You kind of walked into the middle of something that I don't think you were planning on. And yet the best thing that I heard this week came from the text message that you sent me. You said, I don't know if I've ever quite seen you like this. Bro, relax. You're not alone. God will make a way through whatever you're facing. And I'm standing in our bank holding a loan application and trying to keep from just breaking down in tears, because it was perfect. That's what I needed to hear. And he will make a way through this. Yeah. And I trust his heart in it. But man, that like... I hate the ways that fear, you know, I'm thinking about the bunker and just, you know, the idea of fear making a home in us. And even about my comment from a couple of weeks ago where I said, I'm not sure if my heart's ready for heaven, because to have fear eradicated, like especially today, and bumping into that and bumping into some of that subtle fear about, performance, what people would think of me, burning bridges, and how that started to cripple and debilitate me in some ways. It was just like, oof, like how deeply ingrained and interwoven fear can become in our lives. And to be able to experience God's complete, like the Holy Spirit's complete eradication of fear, that is, I can't tell you how joy-filled that idea makes me. And yet I think about it, I'm like, oof, I don't know what I would do. Like if that was completely eradicated, and kind of like your conversation with Sarah, where you were surprising yourself at being able to enjoy a day of 6 hours, a 2 hour thing that turned into a 6 hour thing that turned into sitting in traffic that you weren't expecting. To experience and to get caught off guard by that, and yet to see movement and to see change is a really cool thing.
It is. And I think it'll be a wonderful time when I know we always think in terms of completely eradicated. I think things phase out more slowly than completely. And I don't know that in this life we'll see it in, but that's what excites me about eternity. I think, man, just to not bump up against those things and not be limited by time demands or other expectations we put on our life that we can't respond to what the day might bring us, even if it's very different from what we sorted out to do or your future. So, well, congrats on the new job in an ideal environment. And wow, that sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, we'll see how it unfolds. There's still a few pieces that would have to land in order for it to become a reality. But such is life. And if it's supposed to be where God wants us, then he will make a way through it.
Always. That to me is the relief no matter what's happening. There's a way through this. And it's I think the paralyzing thing is I need to figure out all of those ways before I can take the first step. Instead of, I take the first step and then watch what unfolds, because even if, and I think people have sometimes the pressure of, well, what if I make the wrong decision, then things won't unfold. And you know what? God's even faithful enough that if we, particularly something like a job, if he had something else for you and I missed it and got this, he's still going to make a way. He's not going to say, well, you didn't do what I wanted. So that's just it. You're out.
Yeah.
That's what we've been taught, but it's not exactly true. So you want to get back to our God-shaped life?
Yeah. We've got two left, even though I keep trying to throw one of them out.
You keep talking like we have one more. Yeah. But that's that's been off air. People don't know about that, but he keeps going, okay, one more of those things, don't we? No, last week we had two more of those, right? No, we have three. Two more. See if we can get to them in the next couple. We're doing two back-to-back here because Sarah and I are moving next week, according to our contractors. And I they listen to this, so it's scary, but... Sarah and I were in there Sunday just laughing, going, there's no way. There's just no way that they're going to have all this done. So I hope they hear this. And to spite me, they get it all done anyway, just so we can prove me wrong. But there's so many things that just look, okay, well, and I know it doesn't have to be perfect before we move in, but there does need to be like a refrigerator and some cabinet structures. There need to be a few things there that'll help us out, but we'll see. So next week we'll be packing up, and the sound equipment will be all packed away, and we won't be in our new place yet. So we're going to do a two for today. So we'll have a one in the can for next week around. Yeah. The fourth one we're going to cover is tender authenticity. And I had a thought about this morning as Sarah and I were out walking about all these things, with maybe the exception of resilient trust. All of these things, until you can first treat yourself this way, you won't treat others this way. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a generous compassion for yourself and your weakness and your struggles and know that God does, you won't share that with other people. And I think this is one of those too, a tender. If I can't be authentic with me, if I can't and be tender in the authenticity. What I like about authenticity is it's not that I've got everything right. It's not a matter about being perfect. It's not a matter of always having the right wisdom. It just means being authentic with what's happening inside of you. Being tender with that, and that will lead you to places, even that if I'm being authentic and I'm authentically wrong, being authentic gives the capacity for change to come and new insight to come and things. So I love the idea that this is where it first happens inside of us. And then when I get comfortable with it, treating myself with tender authenticity, then I can treat others with tender authenticity as well.
I love that. I love the idea that starting with self and your own experience, you know, I think about, you know, the generous compassion, and even just today, in just the chaos that I was not expecting today with some of these decisions previously. And I would honestly, Wayne, previously, I would have been not doing okay. I would have, I would not have been able to be sitting here with you. I would have not been able to pull myself together and go into the bank and talk to people. It would have wrecked me, would have undone me. And it's interesting thinking back to that of, okay, this is where I'm at. That's okay. And being, I think of your term, stay in your body. When you,
it wasn't mine. I borrowed it from somebody.
Well, okay. So, but that idea of staying in your body and how I feel like that really aligns with tender authenticity, right? To be, to show up in as yourself, allow yourself to be seen. I mean, that it very much ties into probably one of my favorite speeches of all time by Theodore Roosevelt called The Man in the Arena. And it's talking about how there's two types of people out in the world. There's the people who show up and they allow themselves to be seen in the arena. And sometimes they get bloody and they get dirty and they, you know, they can get beat up a little bit, but at least they've shown up and at least they're allowing themselves to be seen. And the final phrase of that section of the speech says that if I fail, at least I fail daring greatly, so that my place is never with the cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. The critics that sit in the stands and point and laugh at the strong man as he struggles, but never actually allow themselves to be seen.
Yeah, it seems like people really do prefer the stands. I'd rather criticize someone else than lean into the space that will make me a different person. This tender authenticity, it used to come up in my mind, just gentle honesty. That's how I used to say it. People would write me emails and, you know, no longer can stay in this fellowship, seeing a whole lot through it. But how can I leave this fellowship without hurting anybody, without creating this division, without all that? And I found myself just writing back to people, you know, just be honest and be as gently as you can in that honesty. So you're not looking to rain on people's parade. You're the Babylon, the Antichrist. I've got to get out of this horrible place. You know, don't need to. And mostly people do. There've been a lot of people who leave with that angst. And I want everybody to know how wrong you are. And I'm leaving because you're wrong. But just if you find your way into a place and say, you know what? I just don't feel like we fit here like we used to. So we're going to take a break. And I'm sorry, that may communicate things that we don't mean for it to communicate, but we love you and we hope, you know, there's just ways to be authentic, never less than authentic, which doesn't always mean you owe everybody every bit of truth you have in your heart. You don't owe an explanation to everybody about everything. And there's some things to say, no, I'm sorry, I just can't do that. No, well, why? Well, I'm sorry, I just can't. Authenticity is not the complete bearing of your soul. What an ugly shirt you have on, or what a stupid tie. And, you know, it's not, that's not, that's obnoxious authenticity, and it's not helpful. I love the idea of just being tender. Find a way to express it as tenderly as possible. I'm sorry, I can't do what you're asking me to do. It doesn't fit for my life right now. And you don't owe people more of an explanation than that. But obviously the people around you want to manipulate you. They want to know why, because they want to give you a reason why your why is no good. And what they want from you is the only reasonable alternative to whatever it is that's going on. And I think that's why we don't learn authenticity well, because there are people like that who are trying to force us into their rut. And we're just saying, no, I'm not going there. And then it's why. And then we give them a why and they argue it and dispute it. And in their minds, they've discounted it. So now you need another why. And then people are just trying to come up to, I want you to understand what I'm doing. And it's exhausting. You don't owe people that. The authenticity to just say, this isn't for me. And I just, you know, I may be wrong about that, but, you know, right now I'm going to have to say, yeah, it's not right now. And people have to get used to that. And it's hard for people. You know, we've talked before about Peck's book, The People of the Lie, the people who always got to have their way, who are manipulating everything behind the scenes, who lie and gossip and draw people's emotions to serve them, because everyone's afraid. You don't want to upset that apple cart right there.
Yeah.
And that's what leads us to what I think is the opposite of tender authenticity, which is the little white lies we tell people under the guise of, I'm just trying to protect their feelings. Now, you don't have to be obnoxious on the other side and just tread all over people's feelings, but never less than authentic. And I think the reason you get here is you have to have enough people in your life who have gaslit you or ghosted you. And you know how, not only how bad it hurts, how betrayed you feel when you feel like someone has been honest with you and then you find out they in fact have not been. They have been just blowing you smoke because they were trying to protect your feelings, but they really couldn't tell you what they were honestly thinking.
And the hard part is that they think that they are doing what's best for you, right? Like they come back in it and they say, well, I told that white lie, or I didn't give you that piece of information or whatever, for whatever reason, but it's for your best. You just didn't need to know that. I didn't want you to get hurt by it, or, you know, that kind of thing. And it's,
or they blame you.
If you
always get so mad that I can't say anything because it just ticked you off, and okay, I haven't been ticked off in forever at you. So I don't know where that's coming from. You're just hiding behind something. But this being gaslit or ghosted by someone you deeply love is one of the greatest hurts you can have. Particularly someone's ghosting you and then they gaslight you about the ghosting you. So you say, hey, are you ghosting me? And they're going, oh gosh, no, I'm sorry. I just was busy. I missed your text, blah, blah. And then later, like 2 months later, they'll say, yeah, I've really had some problems and I just didn't want to confront it with you. You're going, okay, well, that was very helpful. So you not only lied to me, you lied about lying to me. And so I feel like I'm insane. I feel like, well, hold it a minute. Either you really are gaslighting me or I'm going crazy. And that's the definition of gaslight, right? It may not be everybody. Yeah. Maybe enough people around you have bought into a common strategy or lie. Mm-hmm. And so people are not being upfront with you. And then when it all comes apart, you don't sit there and say, oh, gosh, I really feel like they were trying to protect me and I feel incredibly loved. Thank you. That's awesome. You don't feel that way. And when you realize the pain that inauthenticity creates, and you really want to find a way to be authentic with people, even if it hurts, even if it risks something, because I need you to know what I'm really struggling with, so that if there's any chance of repairing the relationship, the authenticity will give us the chance to repair it. But I honestly think it's the manipulative right here that are a problem. If you've had a manipulative parent or sibling or friend who is just always manipulating you to their end, and if you don't do it, they are going to come at you with gossip and accusation and hurt and pain of all kinds of things, then you just, once you've been through it, I think to a very hurtful degree, it's very easy then to say, okay, I want to learn what tender authenticity really means. I want to be able to be authentic with people, but I'm not out to start fights. I want to be honest and open a door to where people can be honest with me as well and have that kind of thing. One of the things you said on the podcast, I had this written down somewhere where it's gone. you said this, and you said it takes somebody resting in a love that cannot be stolen to be able to have a voice in the world. And I
said that.
You said that. You weren't quoting anybody. It just came out of your mouth. No. I heard it when I was re-editing. I wrote it down because I thought, wow, that's one of the best things I've heard that week. But that was like 2 months ago, maybe. But I think that underlies all this God-shaped life. When you're resting in a love that can't be stolen, now you'll have a voice in the world. I mean, lots of people have a voice in the world that don't have a love that can't be stolen. So their voice is trying to replace that. And that those people are annoying and obnoxious. But when you have a love that can't be stolen, now you're in a space where tender authenticity can have some viability, because I don't have to prove myself. I don't need you to love me to be validated. I can disagree with you about something and still be loving about it. I don't have to agree with you to love. And those things, unless you have a love deep in your heart, you're living off the reactions of other people. You can't do that. And you won't have the voice God wants you to have in the world.
Yeah, I think the tender part of that is the really intriguing element to me, because especially when you're working through that for yourself and you're trying to figure out how do I be tender in the process of allowing myself to be authentic, or allowing myself to be seen, or showing up in the world, to show up and say, okay, I'm going to be bold. I'm not going to hide. I'm not going to push myself to the side. And even, and this is the hard part, especially when you're in an environment where there's a lot of manipulation or there is gaslighting taking place. It's even if I feel like I'm crazy, I'm going to be authentically crazy here. I'm going to trust those internal feelings, and I'm going to be tender with those internal nudges. And even if I get proven to be crazy, at least I was authentically crazy.
Okay. That's approach. Or even if I'm wrong about something, you know, it's okay to be authentic. So, you know, I don't see it that way. And then people may actually convince you that you can see it another way. But one of the power dynamics of groups of people is who they withhold information from, right? And inauthenticity, mm-hmm. I mean, authenticity doesn't withhold information to expose someone else.
Yeah.
Like this, we know this is really going on. So we've got this alternative reality that person has no clue about. So no matter what you say or do, it doesn't fit in this artificial subclimate that has come to exist in whatever group you're in. And those things become that's what cliques are part of. That's where things become very, very hurtful is we've got the inner knowledge and we're not sharing it with you because you know, you don't deserve it, or you're not ready for it, or you're not whatever. That's what you come to really treasure. Hey, I'm going to be real. I'm going to be authentic. And I'm going to do that when Jesus talked about the smoldering wick he'll not put out and the bruised reed he'll not crush. Jesus was very much, when I've got somebody that I'm communicating with, woman at the well, Zacchaeus, whatever, I'm trying to find a way in. I'm not going to be less than honest or truthful or authentic with them, but I'm going to find this tender approach, like Brad used to always talk about, to give people on-ramps, not exit ramps. I don't want my approach to give an exit ramp. I want my approach to give an on-ramp, but not letting people walk away with a false impression, because I think that's unfair to relationships, and the damage will occur over time. So I do think one of the things tender authenticity does, it makes you unmanipulatable. It's a word I used a few weeks ago when we started the God-Shaped Life, and I got this email from Stevie. He says, your podcasts often do have that Inklings having a conversation in a pub kind of feel, which... If you don't know about the Inklings, that was C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien and a bunch of these guys who are Oxford scholars, and they've been at a pub once a week and they're all good writers and influencing the world. And I think everyone loves to have that Inklings having a conversation in a pub kind of feel. It said the word unmanipulatable, which I don't even know is a word, but I like it, from a past podcast has stuck out to me. In a few weeks, we will be attending a wedding, and my mother will be there, who makes constant attempts to manipulate us and our children. And I'm feeling a lot of fear and dread over how that will go. That might be a good thing to talk about in more detail sometimes. He has these questions. What does it look like to live loved specifically in the face of others trying to manipulate you? How do you calmly, lovingly, firmly set up those boundaries and negotiate that with others who are trying to manipulate you? And thirdly, especially when they are family, especially when they are your mother, what does it look like to honor your father and mother in the midst of that? Because that's a big lever she reaches for in trying to manipulate. So I'm sure you've never faced this in your life, Kyle, but some of us have.
Yeah, never bumped into that one.
It's always more difficult when it's family, because it's people that you will be seeing or hopefully interacting with the rest of your life. But, and there's two options, right? Particularly an overbearing, manipulative mother or father in a family is two options. One, you're going to have some conversations to clarify things. Or when I'm with that, I just shut up and go along, because it's just easier to submit than to fight. And I think that's the approach many people use. But what people don't realize is when your control of my life and I give into it, it makes me not want to come back very often. So the relationship is still being impacted. I may do everything you want when I'm there, but I'm going to be less there.
Yeah.
And manipulated people don't realize that. We've had some occasions in our family, both Sarah and mine, at times, to sit down with people and say, okay, you can't do that anymore. So it says, what does it look like to live loved in the face of others trying to manipulate you? Well, one is manipulation always holds some costs, right? If you don't go along, it's either anger, it's accusations, it's the family will gossip about you, it's You won't get invited back. You won't, I mean, you'll be ostracized. You'll be cut out of the will, the popular threat back in the day. So yeah, the idea of how does living love fit in that? Well, if I know I'm loved by Father, then whatever I have to risk here, if I'm willing to risk, and like I said, some people are not worth the risk. It's just, I'll go along. I do this once or twice a year. I'll go home. I'll smile and make good. And that's the way to do it. The second point about how you commonly, lovingly, firmly set up boundaries and negotiate those. Let me encourage you to this. Those of you who think you can set up boundaries with a manipulative person, do not use the word boundaries, because that will inflame them. I know you've got a book. I know it says you can set up boundaries. What it's talking about, I think, is internal boundaries. Just here's, I'm going this far and no further. Because once you bring it up, and I know people on the other side of this, people, someone talked about this a couple of weeks ago, where the family's real upset because the kids no longer participate in the same Sunday morning thing their parents do. And so the parents have cut off, and other siblings have just cut off all relationship because they've got to set appropriate boundaries for them against the people in their life who are finding more freedom. So this boundaries language can get used in a positive way internally, in a very manipulative way externally. So I would encourage you to keep it in. Yeah. It's not, you're not going to sit down with your old mom and say, hey, listen, don't do this anymore. Cause we're not going to respond to it. It's just not that you're not going to negotiate to a good thing here. What you're going to do is find a way that God wants you to respond. Tender authenticity is a great way to go. It's to be able to say, you know what? And I had this with my mom. She sat down in my patio one day, and she blessed her soul. She's no longer here. And she said, I tell you what you're going to do from now on. And I said, oh, really? What's that? She said, you're going to send me your flight schedule every time before you leave town. And I said, well, Mom, actually, I'm not. And she's, what? You're going to, and I, we had this a long conversation. My kids, my dad, everybody in the room is just saying, would you just shut up and give her your itinerary? Because what's the big deal about it? But here's what I'm thinking. The big deal is my mom was a bit of a worrier. The day I'm flying and she's got an itinerary, she's doing flight status searches. She's finding out if that aircraft has a problem at some point, or if it just drops off, the update or whatever, she's going to live all day in fear. And if something were to happen to me somewhere, she's going to be the one that tells Sarah, do you know Wayne's plane went down? Now, I don't want Sarah to hear that from my mother when she was alive. I just didn't, because it was just too much fear and anxiety there. So I just, I didn't say all that to Mom. I just said, Mom, I'm really not. I would, if something happens to me, I would prefer that Sarah inform you and not the internet. And so I'm not going to give you my flight schedule. And everyone's like, what, it's just a flight itinerary. Well, I had a reason not to. I had a really good reason. I didn't want Sarah informed by my mom. I wanted my mom informed by Sarah. And fortunately, no one's ever needed that. But that's not where we negotiated a boundary. I just said, no, I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that. And I hope you can appreciate my reasons why. Did she agree with him? No. Did other people not agree with him? No, they didn't agree with him. But you know what? That's my choice. I get to make that. And I wasn't mean to her. I wasn't, I'm never going to do it. You shut up. Stop asking. I just said, Mom, I'd rather you not do it that way. Yeah. Now, she didn't like it. And she gave me a bit of a cold shoulder for a bit. But, that's a price to pay if you're going to set some boundaries. You're going to say, I'm not going to let you do this to me anymore. And if you persist in it now, are you going to punish me for that? And I've got relatives who've done that too, and other people in my life. When you begin to live authentically, not everybody's going to like it. But you've got to decide for you and your family, the person who's writing here, where can you lay down your life and go along and get along? And where can't you? And when you can't, just say, I'm sorry, I can't go there. And if they're hurt by it, say, I'm really sorry. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I may even be wrong. But if I change my mind, I'll get back to you. So you can soften it, but you don't soften it by giving in. Okay, I guess I will. If I decided a few days later, it's not a big deal. I'll let her have it. Then I could come back to her and say, I've thought about it again. But it's being in the moment. I think the living love gives you enough presence in the moment to be authentic and not just say what you have to say to get out of the situation and then regret it later. And I used to have a ton of that in my life where I'd look back and go, I wish I'd said this. I just was not present in the moment. I was so fearful about what people were trying to do to me that I just found a way to go along. And then I'd go away despising myself. I just, man, I wasn't honest. I oftentimes I couldn't even think of what to say because the way they were treating me put such the focus on me, and you get all that selfish stuff going inside and it just blocks out any good alternative thinking. But when you no longer get triggered internally to that angst or anguish, it's amazing the things you think to say, which is why people often say later, I wish I would have said this. Why didn't I think of it then? Why? Because you were too anxious to be in that creative space.
Yep. Yeah, I think about Brené Brown's comment when she talks about dealing with challenging situations like this. And she says, have a soft front and a strong back. And I really like that idea of, you know, that tenderness, having that tender front, but also the strength behind your beliefs or your heart or where you feel like God's leading you through this to say, I deeply appreciate where you're coming from, but I'm not going to give in to that, or I'm not going to succumb to that. And I've been in quite a few conversations over the last couple of weeks where the go along to get along phrase has come up more than one occasion. And I think about that. And in one of the conversations, just the image of slowly sacrificing the soul kept coming up. Because as you go along to get along, one person is compromising, one person is always sacrificing, and often without the other person even being aware of it. And man, to be able to show up in tender authenticity and say, no, I'm not going to sacrifice myself just to go along. The cost of sacrificing myself is greater than the punishment that I might receive by not just going along in this situation.
And this is where religious thought serves us so poorly, right? Because defending yourself, sacrificing yourself, that's a godly thing. We're supposed to sacrifice ourselves. And the manipulative people are really big at using that.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a way to lay down your life when Jesus invites you to. That's what it means to live sacrificially. It doesn't mean to not treat yourself fairly, to not open the door, to be honest about who you are and the resentment of people forcing you to do things that you haven't chosen to do internally because of the manipulations of family or whatever. And it's a challenge. It's hard because even watching my granddaughter go through at a high school level where she ran afoul of the mean girls, but they really wanted her to be part of their clique, but their clique was something she didn't want to be a part of. Well, so now we're going to destroy you because you wouldn't be part of us. And remember, my daughter said, I'm so proud of her because she's really made the choice not to give in to the mean girls, even though they're the ones with the kind of the campus reputation or whatever. And she's chosen a better set of friends, even when she had access to the one group she didn't find comfort with. And the way they treated some of her other friends was something she just wouldn't put up with. She paid a price for that. That's sacrifice. The sacrifice is not, I did what you wanted so you'd be happy. The sacrifice is, I did what I needed to do and I suffer your wrath or your ire or your judgment for it. That's the self-sacrifice that we need to talk about, because so much religion gets us to anything I want is selfish. Anything I say, if I just don't like, how do I honor my father or mother in this? Well, I'll tell you, honoring your mother is not doing everything she asks you to do. That's not honoring. Honoring is loving them, respecting them, having the grace to be authentic with them. Say yes when you can say yes, say no when you need to say no, and be kind and gracious about it. Now, if they can't respond in kind, if they're angry and condemning and isolate you, then just go along with it. You don't have to fight it. You don't owe the world. I've got me and mom, we got to pretend we're in a great place together and we're just love each other because we're Christians. No, there's a real negotiation to relationships, but it doesn't happen. You don't sit down and negotiate a friendship. From my side, I'm negotiating where honesty and love and tenderness allow me. They're negotiating from their side. If there's love and tenderness, they're great. Things will work out well.
Yeah.
If there's not, if it's just, I can't love you if I can't manipulate you. And one of the things you said about that go along, get along. I remember someone saying to me recently, why can't you just be okay with it? And what I was being okay with was a lie that was existing inside a group of people I love. And I then I shortly after that, I read a quote that said, when people say to you, why can't you just be okay with it? If you know they wouldn't be okay with it on the other side of it, then you know they're blowing smoke. And I thought, wow, that's exactly the truth. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't have been okay on her side if I would have said something like that. Why can't you just be okay with it? Because it's one of the most manipulative things people say. It's like, I'm the peacemaker here. You're the problem causer. And just be careful when you get around manipulative people. They're always going to position you to be the bad guy, and they're the good guy. And the fact is, in any relationship, we said this last week, there's reason enough both of us can miscommunicate. Things can go awry. No one's perfect in human relationships.
Yeah.
Where they go awry, those when people who say, I've got to be right, and you've got to be wrong. And if you don't do it my way, that's where relationships go to die, unfortunately. And they can be resurrected, but that takes some choices. Well, I was going to read one more thing I got from an email this week that I thought was fun. It was somebody that's gone through some real pain in their life, and I've been kind of walking alongside them for a period of time. And they were talking about the idea that anytime someone cries, this is what they were taught, if you cry, it's because you're soliciting sympathy and it's against God's will for you to cry. You're a bad person for crying. And then she wrote this. These are the traumas that religion brings, the lies that were hard to detect because they sound so true in the religious world. We talk about illusions and how religion builds illusions. I read that and went, yeah. Finding your way to tender authenticity is a gift not only to you, it's also a gift to the people around you, whether they can see it or not.
Yeah, correct.
Because it's going to challenge them. I'm either going to move toward freedom and life, or I'm going to reject this person as they did to Jesus, because your authenticity is challenging our illusions, and we like our illusions.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.